Hey, everybody. It is Tuesday, March 5th, 2024. You're listening to the Mo News Pod. I'm Moshe Wanunu.
And I'm Jill Wagner. This is the place where we bring you just the facts.
And we read all the news and read between the lines so you don't have to. Jill, I'm coming to you from South Florida this week. We're at Alex's mom's place, my mother-in-law's place, for the week. But we have a story in the podcast today where Miami is effectively telling a certain group of people, don't come.
They heard about you guys, Mosh.
So there's a whole campaign against spring break that it's destroyed Miami Beach. By the way, we're not staying on Miami Beach. We're just north of that area. But I've told the good folks in Miami, I have no more than one or two drinks on any given evening. And you don't have to worry about me being rowdy. And I believe I have special dispensation to drive down to Miami Beach.
Something tells me that the new parents visiting grandma in North Miami aren't the people that they were targeting with this.
So yeah, we'll have more for you on the origins of that and this new campaign out of Miami later in the pod.
Okay, now to some news. A unanimous ruling from the Supreme Court on whether Donald Trump can stay on the Colorado ballot. It is Super Tuesday. What is at stake and what's not at stake in maybe the least eventful Super Tuesday in years?
Not so super, Jill.
Not super. It's a snoozer.
Snoozer Tuesday. But hold on. Just a reminder, while it might be a snoozer on the federal level, that is not your permission to skip voting today in one of 16 states in American Samoa. You should still get out there and vote because there's some key races on the congressional and state level that you need to be voting in.
Okay, that healthcare hack that we told you about last week is causing a ton of headaches for hospitals and doctors across the country. Overseas, France has become the first country to explicitly enshrine abortion rights in its constitution. We'll tell you why. Back here in the U.S., according to the data, yep, college is still worth it.
We found this story notable just because more and more Americans are saying college is not worth it in polling, but the data and how much money you make with a college degree versus non-college degree is widening. So we'll have that in the pod.
Malaysia could renew its search for that missing MH370 flight a decade after it disappeared. We'll tell you why.
Yeah, hard to believe. That's 10 years ago this week, folks, that went missing.
Welcome to Miami, or not, the city telling spring breakers to stay away. And Taylor Swift's boyfriend's brother, just kidding, Jason Kelce, announcing retirement after 13 seasons. And Mosh is on this day in history. Mosh, yesterday was my favorite on this day yet. So I'm very excited to see what you've got.
I don't know if this is going to live up to yesterday, Jill, but
no pressure.
But we got everything from Stairway to Heaven to the hula hoop in today's on this day in history.
All right. Well, my voice, as everyone could hear, still not 100%, but I'm going to give it a whirl. The Supreme Court yesterday unanimously siding with former President Trump, allowing him to remain on the ballot. By a 9-0 vote, the court reversed a Colorado ruling that disqualified him from returning to office because of his conduct around the January 6th insurrection on the U.S. Capitol. The justices said the Constitution does not permit a single state to disqualify a presidential candidate from national office. The court warning of disruption and a chaotic state-by-state patchwork if a candidate for nationwide office could be declared ineligible in some states, but not others, based on the same conduct. The court's decision to keep Trump on the ballot applies to other states with similar challenges to his candidacy. There are challenges in 36 different states trying to disqualify him based on the 14th Amendment to the Constitution. Colorado's top court relied on a long, unused post-Civil War provision of the 14th Amendment to declare Trump ineligible to return to the White House. Section 3 of that amendment bans anyone who previously pledged to support the Constitution, quote, as an officer of the United States, from returning to office if they betrayed their oath by engaging in insurrection. At issue, the text of Section 3 does not specify who is supposed to enforce the clause or when it should be invoked. The court ruled that it is Congress that must determine eligibility for federal candidates and that it would basically, again, be chaos for all 50 states to each make their own decisions.
So the justices here drew a clear distinction between state and national elections, writing that states do have the power of disqualifying persons for state office, but with respect to federal office, that is the purview of Congress, that states cannot make their own determination of who runs for president. Though the justices all provided different reasons, different rationales for the opinion, the bottom line from the decision from the court yesterday is that states cannot ban candidates for federal office individually. That was the unanimous decision. Now, when you actually break it apart, four of the justices would have just left it at that statement, saying states cannot ban candidates. That's the three liberals plus Amy Coney Barrett. In fact, the three liberals, that's Elena Kagan, Sonia Sotomayor, and Ketanji Jackson, all expressed dismay at what they said was the stunning sweep of the majority approach, that the five conservatives of the majority ruled further that Congress must act to give Section 3 force, that basically Congress is the only one that can determine whether someone can be banned from the ballot, which was not at issue here in this case, but they went an extra step. So the liberals here felt that that was unnecessary and that that requirement actually helps insurrectionists in the future. They objected to the fact the decision rules out judicial enforcement of Section 3 and again requires Congress to act. Amy Coney Barrett actually agreed with them, in essence, that the court went too far. She just didn't like the way the liberals wrote it. So what you can do on the court is you can write your own concurring opinion or dissenting opinion. So Barrett wrote her own opinion, saying, I think the court went too far here, while I agree with the overall decision, but I also disagree with the liberals, who I feel are being very divisive in their opinion and a little snarky. In fact, the liberals began their opinion by quoting Roberts's opinion in the abortion case last year, saying that the court went too far in the abortion case by overruling Roe v. Wade. And so they were trying to basically prove a point here. And Amy Coney Barrett wanted nothing to do with that. So she wrote her own opinion. So effectively, 9-0 that Trump stays on the ballot. 5-4 interpretation of the 14th Amendment. But interestingly, none of the opinions addressed insurrection. In fact, they all addressed the legal issues at hand. None took a position for or against on whether Trump had actually engaged in insurrection. Now, that's something the Trump team was asking the court to do. Hey, can you also clear the man from insurrection? And the court's like, we're just going to deal with the legal issue here. So
leave us alone.
Leave us alone. We just don't want to deal with this anymore. So the Colorado courts did determine that the president, former president, did engage in insurrection. So that's sort of left hanging out of this case. Not that it has immediate legal ramifications, but still interesting. Nonetheless, Trump celebrated on Monday. Here's a bit of what he said.
Very important decision. We're very well crafted. And I think it will go a long way toward bringing our country together, which our country needs. And they worked long, they worked hard, and frankly, they worked very quickly on something that will be spoken about 100 years from now and 200 years from now. Extremely important.
Jill, it's notable praise from Trump for the court, given that he has taken issue with things the Supreme Court has ruled on in the past, and given that this same court has multiple issues before it, including an immunity case. He, of course, is claiming, we've told you about this on the podcast before, that he has immunity from prosecution for anything he did as president for life. That's an issue here with a couple of the criminal indictments, including the federal election interference and classified records. That case is before the court. The gut, based on the arguments, is the court will also have a near unanimous decision the other way against him, that they will not rule that a president has immunity for life for anything he or she did as president. So it'll be very interesting, given how over the top Trump was Monday with his praise for the court, how he reacts when, I should say, if and when the court rules this summer that he doesn't have immunity for these cases.
And Moshe, it all came ahead of Super Tuesday. About a third of the country is voting today. Voters in 16 states and American Samoa will make their voices heard. It is the biggest single primary contest day and will result in over a third of delegates assigned to determine the Republican presidential nominee. It will also put Trump and Joe Biden very close to locking up the delegates that they need for the nomination. When it comes to delegates, based on the math, it appears that Trump could seal things up next week and then Biden the following week.
And then, of course, you have Nikki Haley, who did win the D.C. primary over the weekend. That was her first. Some say it might be her only win against Trump. If you believe the polls, she's about to be swept today on Super Tuesday. But there could always be interesting surprise results here. So we're going to watch as we always do. But pending no miracle, and Trump getting even closer to the nomination, the question is, what does Nikki Haley do next? And so here are the three things you can look out for. One, as soon as tonight, she could endorse Trump.
Not happening.
All right. So Jill is predicting that is not happening. She, you know, has been riding this line between saying, you know, ultimately she'll support the party's nominee. Now, recently, she's not so sure she'll support the party's nominee. She has been extremely critical of him, but also defending him at times. So does she make that call tonight? Jill says no. We will watch. Will she make that call in the coming days? Potentially. So that's option one. Get behind Trump despite all of the bad blood. Option two, the no labels ticket has been putting her name out there saying, hey, come run is a third party candidate, Nikki Haley. We're looking at a UND ticket. Maybe this is your future, Governor Haley. Now, she says she has not had a single conversation with them. But, you know, some people have been asking us about this. I think this one is very unlikely, but that's her second possibility. So option one, endorse Trump. Option two, run as a third party. Then there's option three, keep the status quo. Stay in the race. Don't actually drop out. Keep using your voice, or maybe drop out at some point, but don't endorse Trump. And so there's a group that she believes that listens to her of anti-Trump Republicans and independents. She has a similar view these days to Mitt Romney, to Liz Cheney, as in they're conservative. They just think Trump is a disaster and he should not come back into office. So some people are saying, use your voice throughout the campaign. Don't get lockstep behind Trump here. And ultimately, the belief is from that camp that if Trump goes on to lose in the fall, now you don't expect Haley to like explicitly endorse Biden here. But if Trump goes on to lose, then the hope is among this group that they can then say to Republican voters, listen, you had Trump in there. He lost us Congress in 2018. He lost the election in 2020. His candidates all lost our opportunity to blow out things in 2022. And now he's lost again in 2024. It's time to come back home to where we stood as conservatives pre-Trump. So that's something to look out for.
Wait, really quickly, Moshe, something that we have talked about is just the difficulty of getting on the ballot and kind of the stranglehold that the two parties have on the system.
Yeah.
Would no labels get her? Are they on the ballot? How would that work for the general election?
They would need to engage in a tens of millions of dollar effort to get on the ballot. Like, for example, RFK Jr., who's already spent a good amount of money, is only on the ballot so far in two states, Utah and New Hampshire. Now, he's running as an independent with no party affiliation, but it is expensive. Every state has its own rules in this country to get on the ballot. So they would need a major influx of cash in order to make that happen. Now, keep in mind with no labels, the issue there is that anyone who runs on that ticket is probably taking more votes away from Biden than Trump. And if you look at the people, one of the reasons some conservatives are joining no labels is because they're anti-Trump Republicans. The argument is made to them, what are you guys doing with a third party? In fact, you're ensuring the guy is able to win re-election, former President Trump wins re-election with a lower threshold. So that is where there's been some debate there. But no, I mean, she would need to start from scratch, which is yet another reason for her not to run as a third party candidate. One more thing before we leave politics here. The New Yorker is out. The New Yorker magazine is out. The new interview with Joe Biden. And one thing struck me, the reporter on that piece asked President Biden in the Oval Office, at any point, have you considered not running for re-election, given all of the hand-wringing going on and criticism? And Biden said point blank to that reporter, no, I'm running again because I think two things. This is Biden now. Number one, I'm really proud of my record and I want to keep it going and I'm optimistic about the future. And secondly, I look out there and I say, okay, most of what I've done is just kicking in now, as in he wants to see it through. So for those of you who look at the polling, look at everything else, think about scenarios where Biden drops out, it appears here that Joe Biden is in it to win it, regardless of what anybody says in his party or outside.
All right, plenty of news coming up. But first, we want to thank a few of our sponsors this week, starting with Factor Meal. At least in my house, I know we are pressed for time and we do still want to eat healthy and nutritious meals. And that's why we are so excited about Factor. It is America's number one ready-to-eat meal delivery service. They can help you fuel up fast for breakfast, lunch, and dinner with chef-prepared, dietitian-approved, ready-to-eat meals delivered straight to your door. I have been loving them. I grab them straight from the fridge, heat them up in the microwave, and they are legit delicious. They're not like frozen grocery store dinners. And you get to skip the extra trip to the grocery store, the shopping, the prepping, the cleaning up, while still getting the flavor and nutritional quality you need. You could choose from over 35 weekly meals. It's flexible with your schedule. Get as many or as little as you need. You could choose 6 to 18 meals per week. Plus, you can pause or reschedule your deliveries anytime. And do not sleep on their cold-pressed juices, shakes, and smoothies. I think the cold-pressed juices might be my favorite. So head to factormeals.com/monews50 and use the code monews50 to get 50% off. That is code monews50 at factormeals.com/monews50 to get 50% off. All right, time now for the speed read from the Associated Press. Following up on that medical system hack we told you about last week, the fallout from the hack of a little-known but pivotal healthcare company, Change Healthcare, is inflicting pain on hospitals, doctor offices, pharmacies, and millions of patients across the country. Government and industry officials are calling it one of the most serious attacks on the healthcare system in U.S. history. And as we approach 2 weeks since the hack took place tomorrow, it is still unclear when systems will be back. That February 21st cyber attack on Change Healthcare, which is owned by United Health, has cut off many healthcare organizations from the systems that they rely on to transmit patients' healthcare claims and get paid. And while the outage doesn't appear to affect any of the systems that provide direct care to patients, it has frustrated many who are unable to pay for their medications at the pharmacy counter using insurance.
Yeah, this is the hack we told you about last week. Again, Wednesday will mark 2 weeks of this. The hackers are part of a ransomware gang called Black Cat. They were once thought to be crippled by law enforcement, but still doing their thing here at the next level, it appears. They stole data about patients, encrypted company files, demanded money to unlock them. The healthcare companies here had to shut down most of their network in February as they try to recover. No timing here as to when things will all get back online, whether a ransom was paid, what is actually happening behind the scenes. For perspective here, Change Healthcare, who again, you probably, most of you have never heard of before, processes 15 billion claims totaling $1.5 trillion a year. It's effectively the electronic pipeline that connects healthcare providers with insurance companies and pharmacies and determines what patients owe. So tens of thousands of physicians, dentists, pharmacies, hospitals handling 50% all of medical claims are impacted here. It's gotten the attention of Congress. That's where Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer has written a letter late last week to the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services saying, please accelerate payments to hospitals, pharmacies, all providers impacted by the outage here. Because I'm hearing about this from a number of constituents, and this is extremely concerning. Right now, many patients cannot get information on whether insurance will cover a treatment, while hospitals, in turn, are struggling to bill patients and receive payments. I should note, United Health has extended temporary assistance in the form of cash to organizations to help them keep going until the system is up and running here. But this continues to be an issue, and we continue to hear about it from a number of you out there.
All right, overseas from the Washington Post, France on Monday became the first country in the world to explicitly enshrine abortion rights into its constitution, an effort galvanized by the rollback of protections in the United States. The amendment referring to abortion as a guaranteed freedom needed the approval of 3/5 of lawmakers or 512 votes. The vote result on Monday was 780 in favor and just 72 against. The Prime Minister, Gabriel Attal, says, quote, we are sending a message to all women. Your body belongs to you and no one can decide for you.
Yeah. So France has long legalized abortion. That was not an issue here. But the government of Emmanuel Macron, the president, wanted to solidify the law as he saw what took place here in the U.S. in 2022 at the chipping away of abortion rights and wanted to ensure that the message was clear in France that that would never be an issue there. There were a lot of dramatic pictures out of France as people in the streets were watching the proceedings, big screen set up outside the Eiffel Tower, people holding up signs, my body is mine, my body, my choice, the sound system blaring Aretha Franklin's Respect, as well as Beyonce, Girls Run the World. And you heard honking in the streets, etc. And so a lot of celebration in France. Now, I should note that in France, while abortion was decriminalized in 1975, it is only legal until the 14th week of pregnancy in France. And so keep that in mind, because here in the U.S., there's been a lot of pushback from the left for a potential 15 or 16 week ban. In France, again, it's legal for everybody through 14 weeks. So this amendment, again, in essence, just enshrining it in the French Constitution, but doesn't change anything on a day-to-day basis. And it does come as the U.S. is not the only country where there has been pushback on abortion. You've been seeing it in Poland, in Hungary, in Italy, in Andorra, in Argentina. And so the French are saying that this vote tells them, this is the French government speaking here, that your struggle is ours. This victory is yours. So France is moving in an opposite direction here, with the politicians saying abortion is a matter of constitutional relevance. It needs to be solidified as legal and a guaranteed freedom in the country.
From Axios, as we discuss the increasing cost of college and student loan debt, some new data shows that, yes, college is still worth it. The wage gap between recent college and high school grads has been widening for decades, and it grew even more last year, according to some new Federal Reserve data. The numbers come as new polling from Gallup shows American confidence in the value of a college education is falling. Economic data clearly shows a college degree gives individuals a lifetime earnings edge and other benefits. In 2023, recent college grads aged 22 to 27 working full-time earned $24,000 more per year than the same age group with only a high school degree. And the gap has widened over time, making college degrees even more valuable now than 30 years ago. Back in 1990, the gap was $15,000. Again, the gap now, about $24,000.
And while that data is only from ages 22 to 27, it does continue over time. There's a research economist named David Deming who published data last year that shows that the wage premium goes on to double over a worker's lifetime. He was able to follow a group of college-educated workers through their working lives. So at age 27, the college-educated, college-degree workers were making a 27% premium over high school-only graduates. By age 55, that premium was 60%. So it continues over time here. They also note that more educated workers with a college degree are likely to have other benefits. They're more likely to be able to work remotely in their jobs, have access to paid sick and family leave, health insurance, and other benefits that typically are more available to jobs for folks with college degrees. Now, the question, of course, is what type of degree do you pursue? What type of college do you go to? How much did that college cost? Now, the study did not go into those details, but that's certainly relevant, again, depending on what you majored in, how much you spent on it, and whether it was worth it. Those liberal arts degrees that people like to mock, Jill.
Art history, you mean?
Listen, I'm not going to call one out, but yeah, that has been known to, if you spend a lot of money on art history degree, sometimes you have difficulty. The ROI on that's a little challenging financially sometimes.
My only friend who is an art history major is currently a lawyer, so go figure.
Well, so by the way, bringing up the average salary for the art history major, so I think that, you know, while most of the professors who teach you art history would be like, what do you mean you're going to go into law? It probably actually helps them defend the major, being like, look at our average, look at the average salary for an art history major.
And Moshe, I'm squeaking my way through this podcast, so why don't you take the next one?
All right, speed read four. I got this solo from The Guardian. Malaysian officials said on Sunday they may renew the hunt for MH370. Yes, the missing plane that went missing 10 years ago this week, if you guys can believe it. It comes as a U.S. company that first tried to find the plane back in 2018 is now proposing a fresh search in the southern Indian Ocean where the plane is believed to have crashed 10 years ago this week. So I'll take you back to 2014. That plane carried 239 people, mostly Chinese nationals, on a flight from Kuala Lumpur in Malaysia to Beijing. Satellite data showed the plane deviated from its flight path and then headed over the southern Indian Ocean, where it is believed to have crashed. Now, this U.S. company called Ocean Infinity back in 2018 found nothing. But in the last couple of weeks, they said, we might have more information. You guys should let us search the bottom of the ocean again. And they're proposing what they're calling a no-find, no-fee search, meaning let us do it. You won't have to pay for it. The Malaysians are taking kindly to it. They said, well, show us the evidence and we may renew this search. We owe it to the families here. But we should mention, despite that Netflix doc that came out recently that de-emphasized this, the deal is this. Debris from the plane has washed up on the shore of Africa and on Indian Ocean Island. So we do know it crashed in the Indian Ocean. I know there's a theory out there that it flew into like Russia and disappeared and everyone's disappeared for 240 years. Parts of the plane have been found on beaches in Africa. The question still remains, though, what led to it crashing? Was it purposeful on the part of the pilot? And where does the majority of the debris still lie 10 years later? So that, I believe, is the essence of this new proposed search by Ocean Infinity. And so we'll see if the Malaysian officials go ahead with this and what comes next. But Jill, one person did describe it to me in my messages on Instagram as their Roman Empire. You know, the whole theory that came out last year of like some people think about the Roman Empire like once a day or a couple times a week. And they're like, MH370 is my Roman Empire. I think about it all the time.
I did watch that Netflix documentary. And I have to say my biggest takeaway was the family members who all of these years later still have no closure.
Yeah. That ultimately, while they found those parts, that ultimately like they had to hold funerals for their family members with, you know, no remains. And they still don't know why. What happened, and where exactly it happened. And your heart goes out to them and hope that this new data that Ocean Infinity claims to have helps them with it.
All right, I'm going to give this one a whirl. From News Nation, the city of Miami Beach sent out a strong message to spring breakers this month. We're breaking up with you. The Florida city has released a new ad campaign in which it outlined its plans for stricter rules for tourists. Take a listen.
Hey, we need to talk.
This isn't working anymore.
And it's not us. It's you. We just want different things.
Our idea of a good time is relaxing on the beach.
Hitting up the spa.
Or checking out a new restaurant.
You just want to get drunk in public and ignore laws.
The social media campaign comes a year after Miami Beach declared a state of emergency following two fatal shootings during spring break. It was a third year in a row that Miami Beach had to enact emergency measures to control disorderly crowds.
Yeah, we shared this clip on Instagram yesterday, got a lot of reaction. Some of you saying, hey, New Orleans, hey, Blank City, take a hint here from Miami Beach. Like, we're going to push back on rowdy people who effectively take advantage of our hospitality certain times during the year. So this ad shows the chaos from recent spring breaks, the incidents, calling them our breaking point in Miami Beach. So officials there have said the city is going to implement the following this year: curfews, bag checks, restricted beach access, DUI checkpoints. It's also going to increase law enforcement presence across the board. Also, major parking restrictions, $100 flat fees for parking in Miami Beach. Also, doubling towing rates for non-residents to $516 to have your car towed. They're also closing some parking garages altogether. They're not going to have sidewalk seating at cafes on Ocean Drive. So they're really trying to pull out all the stops here to literally stop you from coming to Miami. Last year, one Miami Beach commissioner said the police were outnumbered by a lawless crowd and that just could not be controlled. Hundreds of arrests were made, dozens of guns confiscated during last year's spring break, and they have just had it. I don't know what this means, though, for folks up the coast in Daytona Beach, Panama Beach, other places, as people are like, well, Miami Beach ain't so welcoming. Maybe we should go somewhere else in Florida.
By the way, the $516 for the towing rate, so random. Like, how did they get that number?
I'll have to ask the folks down here. But by the way, that's doubling, meaning it's already more than $250 to have your car towed in Miami. So apparently not enough of a deterrent. So they're just taking it up a notch.
Okay. And finally, from ESPN, Eagles star center Jason Kelce announced his retirement in a tear-filled speech Monday, closing the book on a Hall of Fame-worthy career. He is one of the key leaders for a team that has made six postseason appearances and two Super Bowl trips over the past seven seasons. He said, quote, stepping on the field was the most alive and free I had ever felt. There was a visceral feeling with football unlike any sport. The hairs on my arms would stand up. I could hit somebody, run around like a crazed lunatic, and then get told, good job. And he finished by saying, I love football.
He's got to get ready to be a best man at a wedding. Coming up soon, yeah. Joe. No, we have no news on that, but obviously.
What do you know, Mosh?
Right. Anything Kelce takes on a lot of interest these days. Kelce, we should say, was a sixth round draft selection back in 2011, played his entire career for the Eagles, and he's got a lot ahead for himself, you know, only in his mid-30s. He has a very popular podcast with his brother, New Heights, which is a fun listen or a fun watch on YouTube. He's become a huge icon in Philly, especially after their big Super Bowl win back in 2018. Of course, you know, you can imagine he'll do some more things with his brother, Travis, now becoming some of the more recognizable athletes in America and around the world. And broadcasting also an option for him. Multiple networks have been courting him already in the lead up to the Super Bowl this year. So you might see him in the announcing booth at some point.
Mosh, I feel like even the people who are so over the Taylor Swift, Travis Kelce relationship stuff, like Jason Kelce. He's just like the universal person that everybody's rooting for.
Yeah, I don't have approval levels for all of them, but I think that's a good hypothesis there. All right, now time for On This Day in History. We begin in 1770, the Boston Massacre. You might have learned about this back in U.S. history class. But just a quick reminder, on this day in 1770, harassed by a mob, British troops guarding the Boston Customs House shot into a crowd of civilians, killing five, wounding several others. Jeering Bostonians, drunk Bostonians were slinging hard-packed snowballs at the soldiers. A small group of soldiers lost control. One was whacked. His musket went off. The others thought they got an order to shoot, hence what took place there. The rebel group led by Sam Adams immediately dubbed it the Boston Massacre. And so that name took hold. This was just before Declaration of Independence, etc. Now, notable thing, you might have seen this in various documentaries or films, who represented those British soldiers following the attack? John Adams, cousin of Sam Adams. John Adams, who would go on to become a founding father and vice president, believed that everyone has a right to a fair trial, also opposed his cousin Sam Adams and his violent tactics, so was willing to take on the case despite a lot of criticism, a lot of incoming. He was actually able to win acquittal for a number of the soldiers, all but two of them. Two of them got manslaughter charges. And I didn't know this, Jill. When you get convicted of manslaughter in pre-revolutionary U.S., you got branded with a letter M on your body.
Mosh, where on their body or were they getting branded with the letter M?
So I read here that they are branded the letter M on their thumbs, so could not be granted again. Basically, the clemency could not be granted again if they went on to kill anybody else. So they would be branded, both thumbs would be branded with the letter M. All right, fast forward to the 20th century. On this day in 1946, a certain British prime minister, who many of you would be familiar with, named Winston Churchill, popularized the term Iron Curtain in a speech in Missouri. He was alongside then President Harry Truman at the time. He was describing the separation of the Soviet Union and its Eastern and Central European allies from the West, saying an Iron Curtain has descended across Europe as the Soviets have brought a whole bunch of Europe under communist control. One other notable phrase, by the way, that he also coined in that speech, special relationship. The alliance between the U.S. and Great Britain. And that, of course, has been used, is used up until this day, that the U.S. and England have a special relationship. Also, that phrase was used by Winston in that speech in 46. Jill, for people who've watched Love Actually a bunch, Hugh Grant, as prime minister there, notes the special relationship. And so there you go. That's the origin of that.
Great movie.
All right. On this day in 1963, the hula hoop was patented by the company co-founder, Arthur Spud Meelin. An estimated 25 million hula hoops were sold in its first 4 months of production alone. It's one of those iconic images of the 60s. But the hula hoop, I think, Jill, is still popular. I haven't been in the burbs to see if the kids are still hula hooping in the driveway anymore.
They are, and yours truly still cannot do it. Never could, never will.
All right, we end here with a bit of pop culture history. On this day in 1971, Led Zeppelin, a little band by the name of Led Zeppelin, introduced one of their all-time classics for the first time at a concert in Belfast. They premiere a song called Stairway to Heaven. Robert Plant, by the way, spent many years trying to answer questions about the lyrics, which were sort of all over the place for Stairway to Heaven. He was asked why he thought the song was so popular, and he believes it's because of the abstraction, how abstract the song is. And when asked, like, so what was your intention behind the song? He goes, depending on what day it is, I still interpret the song a different way, and I wrote the lyrics. So there you go. The writer of the song, he felt about it differently on a daily basis.
Okay, good. I feel better not really knowing what it's about.
It's also a really long song, and it's known, you know, at times for its iconic instrumental. So you're excused. We end here with a film that put a certain Mo News follower on the map. Ryan Phillippe, the actor, is a follower of our Instagram account. On this day, 25 years ago, Cruel Intentions premiered in theaters. So it would star him, Sarah Michelle Gellar, Reese Witherspoon. Jill, a quarter century ago, Cruel Intentions.
You're killing me, Mosh.
Let's end it.
Okay, you know what, Mosh? Why don't you read us out? Because my voice.
All right, Jill, we're going to save your voice for tomorrow. We want to thank all of you for listening to the Mo News Daily Podcast. If you like what you hear, please share this with your friends, your family, people on the street. Hold up a sign in airports. The Mo News Podcast is the place. Jill, I'm going for it because I would like the right to close this out once in a while. This will help us grow, telling the world about it. So please follow us, subscribe to us on whatever podcast app you listen to so you don't miss a single episode. Those follows also help us. You know what also helps us? Reviews, 5-star reviews, especially Apple and Spotify. They help grow the account, help make sure the algorithm knows to introduce it to other people. So take a moment, leave us a review. It'll do us well. It'll do you well, especially if you like this pod. Jill, how'd I do?
A master class, Mosh. I'm taking notes.
With feeling, Jill, with feeling.
I've literally been grinning ear to ear as you've said, this is the best part of the podcast.
I could go on and tell you.
All right. Well, I see I've got my work cut out for me for these goodbyes for the rest of time. But thank you guys for listening and have a great day.
Thanks for listening to the Mo News Podcast.